hamster with a blunt penknife would do it quicker.
Welcome back to A Hamster with a Blunt Penknife, a Doctor Who commentary podcast. And I'm here, sat in Joe's living room, about to watch the second episode of a classic Doctor Who story. What classic Doctor Who story is that, Joe?
We're currently cosied up on the sofa because we're recording around my phone, so we've got to be very close to it. We've got cushions all around.
I think it's just an excuse for Joe to sit on my lap.
I'll be there by the end of this story, I promise. Today we are talking about the four-part Patrick Troughton classic.
Classic.
That came, I think, bottom of the TWN poll recently. The Underwater Menace.
Is it? Did it really come bottom?
It was this and the Space Pirates, I think, that was right down the bottom.
Oh, no.
Yeah, Abominable Snowmen was quite high, you know.
Snowmen and Ice Warriors go right to the bottom for me.
Oh, that's boring, isn't it? Yeah,
I'd rather watch the Dominators.
Ice Warriors, literally, on that VHS release they did have two episodes. They managed to condense down episodes 2 and 3 into 5 minutes of animation.
Yeah, they could condense the whole thing down into about 10 minutes of animation.
Yeah. Are we going to press the reactor and get the ship out, yes or no? Yes, right, the end.
Well, that's
there you
it.
Go. I did promise you some trivia at the start of this episode.
Hit me.
By all accounts, that Annika Wills, this comes from, so whether it's true or
so
not,
it's not
who
true.
Knows.
Okay. Her and Donald Tosh don't believe a word they fucking say.
Well, what she does say is that Patrick Troughton was a bit of a mystic and he was quite excited to have a story set in Atlantis. Mm. And when all these sort of scripts were up in the air, because there were lots of scripts falling out, you know, the William M's, the imps.
All the imps.
And things like this. There were sort of scripts coming
How
and going.
How bad must the fucking imps have been to make this over the imps?
Based the sequel on the to Galaxy Ball.
Oh,
Jesus
God.
Christ, Dylan. Anyway, so he was really excited. And then he got the script and read it, and she describes him as being incandescent with rage.
Wow.
Because he was really nervous about taking on the role.
And he was lumbered with this shit.
And he read the script and he went, this is just, I think they called it a dog. Said, it's a dog.
He wasn't very nice to, was it Paddy Russell? No, it wasn't Paddy Russell, was it? It was
Julia
Smith.
Smith. They talk about that as well.
They weren't very nice to her about it either. That poor woman.
And Annika Wills actually says, her and Michael Craze, because Troughton was new and they love working with him, he towed the line. Troughton was the one being horrible to Julia Smith, and they sort of followed suit. And she said, actually, it was a bit shameful how we treated her.
Yeah, because she didn't write the script. And she was given this script and kind of had this mammoth task of trying to make it. I know she got in touch with... it was given to somebody else first who refused it.
Yeah, Hugh Lloyd.
Yeah.
Hugh Lloyd? Did The Highlanders.
Yeah.
Caught the script for this. He took one look at it. He went to Pinewood, apparently, and said, can we do this?
Yeah.
And somebody in the know said, no.
Yeah.
And so he said, I want nothing.
Because they just done
it
Thunderball, I want to say, or something like that, the James Bond film. So, which is, you know, a lot set underwater. So he went to look for some advice.
Great,
And the whole thing of can we do this was like, no, you can't, not on the budget you've got. If you've got the James Bond budget, then yes, you can.
And so it goes to Julia Smith.
Yeah.
Everybody's appalling to her.
Yeah, which I mean, the way people used to behave, like, it wouldn't fly now.
No?
No, it wouldn't fly at all. You can't behave like that.
Well, we are unfortunately not going to see what people, how they behave, because we're watching
a much better version.
An animated version. Yeah. Shall we skip into two?
Yeah, let's skip in. And are you counting it in? You're counting it in.
Yeah, it's my turn. Yeah. Okay, well, everybody go in 3, 2, 1. Off we go into this. Well, it's not quite colour.
No.
But it's sort of a weird electric blue.
Yeah, blue is a colour, though. But it is a black and white. I always feel weird seeing a Troughton story with the Hartnell titles. It just feels a little weird.
Oh, I've only just noticed.
Yeah, they change.
Why?
Is it the faceless ones or the Macro Terror it changes?
Is it because they'd already animated? No, because they'd animated.
No, because the ones that he has, the ones that Troughton does, the first, the real, I'm not making sense, I'm
trying. No. He's drinking fizzy water, folks.
The bubbles have gone to my head. The early Troughton stories all have the Hartnell titles.
I hadn't realised.
It changes about halfway through this season. I can't remember exactly which one it is, It's either Macra Terror or the Faceless Ones. By the time we get to the Evil of the Daleks...
Do you know what my problem is? Is that I watch so much Doctor Who that I see so many bloody title sequences in this podcast that they all just sort of blur into one for me after a while.
It's like when you see Pertwee with the Tom Baker titles or Tom Baker with the Peter Davison titles.
Or when you listen to an early Big Finish when they've got the Tom Baker music.
Yeah, oh, terrible mistake.
Very odd. Well, you think they'd re-release them now with the right music, wouldn't you?
I'm surprised they haven't done that. I mean, I'm sure that'll come soon. Special edition.
I've got a question for you.
Hit me.
Okay. We're like a fucking double act, aren't we? We finish each other's sentences.
Are we finishing each other off?
The night is young. When we are later, if I vanish under that table, right?
I'll only be 30 night. Seconds. It's 3:05 in the afternoon.
Oh, yeah. Oh, look where we are already.
Looking at Zaroff's giant octopus.
It's very impressive. Those tentacles look particularly impressive. What was I going to ask you?
A question.
You thought I've gone now. You turned it to smut.
Oh, I apologise.
Oh, I remember. Would you choose to watch this, the animated version, or would you choose to watch the original?
This is the only one that I would choose to watch, the animated version.
Of all of them?
Yeah.
Are they?
I mean, I'm assuming we haven't discovered episodes 1 and 4 for in this scenario as
Yes, yeah.
As it currently stands, I think these animated versions of this particular story are much better.
I heard people genuinely complaining that they didn't just animate the missing episodes. I'm like, could you imagine how jarring that would be?
Yeah.
Go from, you know, what is probably quite, it looks quite sumptuous.
Yeah.
To that marketplace in the original one, which is the corner of a studio.
I bet Doctor Who fans are a weird bunch.
Mm.
Hi, Jeremy Bentham, if you're listening.
Can you do that once per episode, please? Yeah. Go on, fuck off. So we haven't quite got out of the cliche of strapping down women and threatening women.
I mean, I've never got down that cliche. We haven't got out of that cliche. What's weird here is that the doctor's all in surgical clothes, and then the other lady can just come in her fish-covered clothes, you know? They haven't quite got the art of surgery down to a T.
But it is of its time
to
treat women like this. I had a conversation with somebody recently about problematic Doctor Who.
Oh, there's loads of it.
But just how I can sort of accept it as a historical document rather than, you know, something that could be okay now. Are you all right with this stuff?
Yeah, I'm fine with it. Like, I don't, like, the views don't necessarily represent my own, and it is a historical document of the times I lived in. For the Christmas episode of Too Hot for TV, which will be coming out as we record this in a few days' time, but will probably be out about 6 months. Will be 6 months ago by the time this comes out. We did.
All right. Man, what a bitch!
That was not a slight at you. We did.
They brought your brothers out. Yeah,
I know. I'm waiting to hear that. We did Curse of the Daleks, the stage play from the 60s. In that...
Seven Keys?
No, Curse of the Daleks, not Seven Keys.
Oh, I don't know much about that one.
It's a Daleks and only stage play that came out in the 1965 for Christmas at the Wyndham Theatre for 1 month, and Big Finish adapted it. And in that, written by David Whittaker and Terry Nation, it's in a future, and they explicitly say this, that is post-feminism, where feminism and women's lib, as they used to call it, happened, and then there's no need for it anymore. So women revert back to type.
No, they don't.
Yes. It's bloody dreadful.
Post-feminism.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, they don't call it that, but that is exactly how their future is described.
God bless the 60s. Yeah, Jesus Christ.
A wild time.
Oh, my word. They've reverted to type. Wow. Yeah.
By reverted to type, I'm sort of paraphrasing there. I don't mean that that's what women should refer to. I mean, that's what either Whittaker or Nation thought.
I have always got a boner for another episode of Two Off TV. I'm salivating for that one now, which was brought out 5.5 months ago. Yeah, Sorry, guys. You can go and find it, though. You haven't heard it yet. Oh, this scene in the original, Troughton sort of running rings around first,
yeah,
is glorious.
And it is.
What's great about it is Troughton's been a bit over the top in Power of the Daleks and in The Highlanders. Mm. I think he sees Joseph first and before, and he's like, I just can't top that. I'm going to have to play this for real. Yeah.
And then Morris Barry, the next story in the moon base, goes, no more of this, mate. Yeah.
You're going to play the Doctor as a serious character. He never quite gets there, does he?
No, but he takes it seriously, even when he's having fun.
What is that coming out of Zaroff's arse there?
That's his octopus. He keeps it in his bum hole.
Oh, here we go. We've got our stock Irish character.
Yeah, I'm not sure that person's ever been to Ireland. But,
Sean and Jacko, who we never... Do we learn where he's from?
No.
But let's say it is nice to have some different accents in the show.
Exactly. Do you remember when this episode was recovered?
Yeah, I do. What did it come out on?
So this and Galaxy 4 were recovered at the same time. Galaxy 4... shows up on the Aztec special edition,
of course,
and then this is the last classic series DVD to be released in that sort of original 2A Entertainment.
Oh, is that the one I've got just over there?
The one you've got just over there, and it took ages to come out. This leaked onto YouTube for years before Angus. It took ages to come out, and it came out with, they commissioned an animation, then cancelled it, and then it came out with the world's most basic recon. And the BBC were like, you can't add new images, you can't move anything out of order, you can't use the title sequence, only the telesnaps. I don't know. They just want it to be the most basic thing as possible. So, yeah, that's what you got.
Wow, that's shoddy. Do you know, it says something about how I used to consider this story, that when Mark moved in here and we had two entire DVD collections, so one had to go up in the loft, the only thing that I didn't have a double of, I didn't buy the Underwater Menace DVD. He did.
It came out so long afterwards.
But I had seen it. I'd seen the episode.
Yeah, it was on YouTube for years.
Oh, maybe like Daily Motion or something.
It was unrestored, but it was like, it was the only way you could see it. But it was next. I remember it's one of the few, most of the classic range of DVDs, I'd wait till they were about a fiver, because, you know, they show up on Amazon at like $14.99 and within a year they'd be a fiver. And that is that and this Aztec special edition are pretty much the only ones I bought brand new.
Just because you want to see the new stuff. Well, that makes sense. That makes sense. I don't know why he looks like a zombie, scientist.
I mean, if you lived underground, you'd look like that as well.
But the original didn't look anything like that. It's a bit of a strange drawing of a face. But
but they're just trying to...
How are the arms? Because, you know, the Mr. Tickle arms that turn up in...
I think the arms look better in this.
Oh, no. Look at Trout's arms.
I suppose that arm would go down to his knee. It's all a bit Wild Blue Yonder, isn't it?
Oh, well done.
Keeping it relevant. Can I eat one of these biscuits?
Yeah, go on.
This is good podcasting, isn't it? Listening to me eating biscuits.
That's the fun of watching it on the sofa, you know?
Yeah. This, you're getting a real experience.
What sort of biscuits have we got? Oh, Master Spencer's our toast.
You're having a guest coming over.
I went all out.
Dylan's coming. He's got some chocolate chunk cookie selection.
Oh, I've been called a chocolate chunk cookie on the odd occasion.
Sorry, guys. I know this might be a bit noisy, but we'll get there. I can't open it. Can
you throw one my way, please?
Yes, I can.
Thank you.
Hang on.
Oh, thank you.
Which one you go?
Could you make more noise than that? looks very chunky.
I'm actually sabotaging your podcast here.
Well, don't worry. People are here for this.
This looks like it's got lots of chocolate in it. So,
guys, if you hear the rapping again, it's because we've gone in for seconds and thirds, okay?
What do you think Professor Zaroff's favourite biscuit is?
It's got to be something unusual. Those new custard creams with jam in them. Have you seen
them? Custard creams with jam in them?
Yeah, I've got one in the other room. I'll give you one later.
Oh, I'm not sure. Dirty bitch.
There's a promise.
He's a bit of a hobnob man.
Hobnob? Why?
No, I just think he likes a bit basic but strong. Troughton's a jammy dodger.
Oh, yeah. Polly? Oh, like a Viennese whirl.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Jamie's
from Times Before Biscuits.
Big rolls.
He just eats horse shit with establishers. And Ben is just a straight digestive.
Yeah. Plain and simple.
Covering the big topics here, guys.
Do you think trying to get this back to a semblance of normality. Do you think that Polly and Ben worked? Because I think there's a point where the producers sort of give up on them a bit.
I think... Sorry, just eating biscuit. Cool. I think they do. I think they're the sort of archetypal companion in a way. They're kids from modern day Earth, as it was then. I think there's so much more to be done with them, and they just sort of dropped in favour of Fraser Hines. I think I would have preferred Ben and Polly to, as much as I like Jamie, to Jamie and Victoria. If I had to choose Jamie and Victoria over, I would choose Ben and Polly.
It's a weird shift, though, to go from two contemporary companions to two historical companions.
Yeah, you wouldn't get it now, would you?
No. I've sort of gone into it in some depth in some other stories where Jamie starts in about two or three stories where he's like, well, what's that? A great flying beastie and all this. And then you get to the Tomb of Simon, he just accepts everything.
He has to, because Victoria's the newbie by that point, isn't she?
Yeah, that's true. That is true.
She's the historical idiot.
All of this stuff in the caves, all of this stuff mining, is any of this actually needed? I know they're needed later on. Jacko and Sean are needed later on to cause the revolt with the fish people. But that does feel like it is sort
of... Is any of it needed?
You chose this, all right?
Yeah, I mean, it's all... The thing about this script is it's enjoyable enough guff, but it's, as we said before, pulpy. It's that type of writer who doesn't think the viewers of science fiction or children or of Doctor Who are intelligent enough to warrant putting too much detail and logic into the script.
They say about Jeffrey Orman, the special features, that he was the writer that dipped his toes into every show, every genre, and he never really had a house style.
Yeah.
I don't think you need to be told that, because all you've got to do is watch The Underwater Menace, which is basically doing every type of Doctor Who story.
I wonder what else he wrote. He was born in 1904, fucking hell. And died in 1978, so he hasn't got a Mythmaker's tape.
No. What else was he involved in then?
Well, I can tell you this.
This is the other type of podcasting I hate, is as you do the research whilst you're talking.
It's fucking lazy, isn't it? I think, well, according to his IMDb, this might actually be one of the last things he wrote.
Oh, bless him. He did. What a way to go out. What a curtain call.
But, you know, he's written loads, but if you, like, his first credit... is in 1936.
What, for telly?
For film.
Go on.
It was called Sunshine Ahead. Clearly he wasn't talking about this.
And what sort of TV did he do?
So he does nothing but films up until... Hold the line, please, caller. He does nothing but films all through the 30s, 40s, 50s.
So he's quite an old man when he's writing.
Yeah, he's towards the... And then he gets into telly... In the late 50s, he writes for Ivanhoe, Interpol Calling, whatever that is, The Avengers, No Place, No Hiding Place, Doctor Who, and then his final credit, again on IMDb, is a film called The Long Duel. And join us next time for the Jeffrey Orme podcast, where we'll be going through the career of Doctor Who's best writer.
What were you using there, IMDb?
Yeah.
That's very useful.
So. It's useful. It's not always right, though. It's not always complete.
I wouldn't have guessed that an old git had written this script.
No, but...
Because it does skip along.
It's like...
You know, if you'd have told me somebody old wrote The Massacre or something like that, I'd have said, all right, fair enough.
I do... You always think of the writers of classic Doctor Who in the 60s as impossibly old, because...
Have you seen Pip and Jane Baker? When they were writing for Doctor Who?
In the 80s, yeah, they were a bit past their best. But, like, you know, they all smoke pipes and drink whiskey for breakfast. That's my image of the...
it's just Robert Holmes.
Yeah.
He put it on his cornflakes.
Well, didn't Terence Dick say that when Barry Letts took over at about midday, he was like, so are we going to the bar now? And Barry was like, no. And it's because his predecessor, Derek Sherwin and Peter Bryan
was a terrible drunk, wasn't he?
Yeah, but they'd hit the bar midday. And Terence Dix was like, oh, fantastic, I hated doing that. But he felt like he had to do it because that's what they did. But it was sort of the culture back then.
I can tell you what Terence Dix used to drink as well.
What did he used
because
to drink?
There's gravy. A memo.
Very thick.
No. There was a memo that he wrote to Bob Baker and Dave Martin, full of expletives. And he says, I'm going to need a large glass of Macon at the BBC bar.
Oh, is that type of wine?
I guess it is, yeah.
Just doing my research live again.
Oh, no, Macon Villages. No, we sell it in the shop.
What is it?
I think it's a white.
It's a city in France.
Are you Googling again?
Yeah, I'm Googling. Yeah, it's a white wine. I'm not a white wine drinker. But,
no, neither am I.
That's interesting. I mean, that's not interesting, but it's the culture's quite interesting. My dad works in advertising, and in the 80s and 90s, they all went down to the pub at lunchtime. And when I did a lot of temping in like offices in my late teens, and it was still the culture then that a couple of times of the week you'd go to the pub at lunchtime and have two.
Well, you would.
Yeah, you'd have two or three pints. Which now, if I had two or three pints at midday, I would not get anything done for the rest of the day.
Well, so, you know, like, it's no great secret that you do work in television now.
It's no great secret.
Well, it's not anymore. Sorry, it's a very small audience. I'm assuming that isn't the culture now.
It's absolutely not the culture. And in fact, you would be quite heavily reprimanded if you...
And yet what they say about the 70s is because it was so alcohol-fueled... Like, fantastically memorable television sprung from that.
Yeah. Whether this is true or not, but legend would have it that Randall and Hopkirk deceased, you can tell what point the lunch break was in the recording of an episode. Because they shoot
from scene to scene.
They'd shoot them over like a day, a bit like Doctor Who, but they'd have a bit longer. But the lunch break in the middle of the day, reportedly, if you
He's
watch
no
it,
longer walking in a straight line, yeah.
But no, you wouldn't do it now, just like you wouldn't do it in any... I mean, I'm sure it does happen in some jobs, but...
I mean, people say Tom Baker's a fabulous eccentric, but I just think he was drunk for 7 years.
I mean, it's probably a bit of both. Having said that, I've worked abroad, and in France, they still have a glass of wine with their lunch when they work. But also, I feel like Britain is a nation of excessiveness when it comes to alcohol. Like, we're very much a binge booze culture. In France... They'll have their glass of wine at lunchtime and then they'll have one when they finish work. Whereas in the UK, we're like, how many pints can you get in an hour?
It's like, forgive me, I'm not casting any aspersions on you when I say this, all right? But it's like when you're single after being in a relationship for a long time. Well, you basically fuck 100 guys in a week, or girls, whatever is your preference.
Or other.
Well, quite, yeah. Animals, you know, whatever your fish people.
Oh, I had a few fish people. I had a few fishy people in my time.
Me too. No, all gay men are fishy, I'm telling you.
I've never looked at a tin of tuna in the same way again.
I was going to say something beyond inappropriate then, I won't. But yeah, we just somehow managed to bring that back round the Underwater Menace.
Yeah, what do you think of the Underwater Menace?
Did you see that sequence a second ago where the Doctor's trying to explain that if you raise the sea level, the whole of Atlantis is going to explode?
Yeah.
In the original, it's a little desk right, with a Bunsen burner on it and a tiny pot. In the animation, it's this huge... I can never say this word properly. It's brazier, isn't it?
Brazier,
not
yeah.
Brazier.
Not brazier, that's something different.
It's this huge brazier with a massive exploding pot. Oh, I love animation.
It's great. I mean, even this of Jamie hanging over the cliff now... I mean, it's not the most exciting thing in the world, but it would have been just Jamie rubbing against himself a bit of scenery.
Javelite rock. Yeah. Oh, he looks terrified.
he almost fell to his death.
He wore a weighted skirt, you know.
Yeah, I know.
In location
Very series. Famous story of him climbing up the what's it called?
Are you talking about the Mine Robber Rocks again?
No, I'm talking about the helicopter in...
Oh, in the invasion?
Yeah, because the updraft would have... You must know that story.
Man, I would love to see that.
Because that's what the Queen did when she was out in public.
What?
On a windy day to stop a skirt blowing up.
Oh, I thought you were saying her skirt did blow up.
No, you never saw the Queen snatch.
Royalist upstairs. You watch your mouth, all right?
The Queen snatch, of course, was my favourite TV show growing up. It's like the Queen's nose, but you rub something else.
Do you know, I can't watch that. What's it called? The Crown.
No, The Crown. Oh, I love The Crown, but the last series I stopped watching. Loves it. Oh, no, The Crown's great. It's got everybody that's been in Doctor Who in it.
It's got everybody who's anybody in it.
It's got Matthew Smith in it.
Has he?
Matt Smith plays Prince Charles. Not Prince Charles, Prince Philip.
Oh, sorry, the Matt Smith. Who the hell's Matthew Smith?
Matthew Smith is who he was credited as.
How is that going to entice me to watch anything that Matt Smith's in it?
Matt Smith was credited as Matthew Smith on the film Terminator Genesis, which he appears in.
Was that any good?
No, it was terrible. Fucking dreadful film.
I've since learnt today that Dylan is a fan of Terminator movies and its spin-off media.
I am indeed.
Anybody wish to talk about that on Too Hot for TV this year? Get in touch.
Get in touch.
I can't help but notice we're not talking about the Underwater Menace very much.
Charlton's got a lovely little hat on now as well.
Well done.
Well, you know, I mean, do we ever really talk about what's going on? At some point, we're still going to do Hellbent and Heaven Sent, aren't we? And one of those is just the same thing again and again and again.
That's going to be tough.
I'm sure we'll find a way.
Well, you told me, you promised me a heart-wrenching story about where you were in your life
Time. Well, you'll get that when we do it.
Where were you in your life when you first saw the Underwater Menace?
I mean... I was probably about 14, so I was probably in between episodes of the reconstruction of Underwater Menace, wanking myself silly in my bedroom. It's true.
I can't believe I'm going to ask you this in a podcast. Did you have a rag?
Did I have a rag? No, I did not.
I had a pair of jeans in the back of the cupboard. It was stiff as a board.
Have you still got them?
My mum found them and she went, I've thrown out that stiff pair of jeans. I admit everything on this fucking podcast.
No, use tissue paper, flush it down the toilet.
I don't think anyone's wanked through the Underwater Menace, if I'm honest.
Someone's done everything.
That's true.
I bet if I googled it now, Jeremy Bentham's there.
If you like chubbies, when Lolan's on the screen, you're in a lot of luck. He's in a grass skirt most of the time.
Yeah.
Oh, my. Oh, I've never known an episode that this goes so off the rails. I'm here for it.
This is what we do now. We don't do commentaries on the actual thing. We just talk about
stuff.
Yeah.
That's basically what podcasting is.
Yeah, exactly. The tangents are the best thing.
You know the On the Time Lash boys?
I do.
Oh, can I tell you a really funny story?
Go on.
I was doing Dalek War the other day, and I kept saying that Mark Donaldson plays Albie Brooke, and it's Mark McDonald. So I had to publicly say, I'm really sorry. And I realised at the end of the episode, and I went, oh, God, I've been crediting a member of On the Time Lash for being an actor in Dalek War.
Now, did you know that Mark Donaldson is in a Doctor Who spin-off? One of his mates illustrated the comics for Doctor Who Adventures, and there's a character in one of them based on Mark Donaldson.
Is it really? Yeah.
Legendary.
You sent me a picture of that, you got it?
I don't have it, but I'm sure I can ask him.
Oh, he's a fabulous fella, Mark Donaldson.
He's a lovely, lovely man.
I wonder what he thinks of the Underwater Menace.
I'm sure he loves it. I'm sure it's on record and on the Time Lash somewhere.
I wonder what on earth would you pair this up with? In the new series? Under the Lake.
Under the Lake or The Doctor's Daughter, because fish people.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Oh, it ended.
It ended. There he is. Zaroff hobbling towards the screen.
I think because, you know, we spent 2.5 minutes of that episode talking about the Underwater Menace.
Sometimes 2.5 minutes is all you need, Joe.
I only need 40 seconds. I just would like you, before we're at episode 2, to please tell us where we are in an Underwater Menace today. What's been occurring?
Well, they've gone down to Atlantis. Polly was nearly turned into a fish. They've discovered what food that they eat, which is plankton. Zaroff is trying to raise the water levels. Ando is their god. The Doctor thinks Zaroff is mad.
That is very succinctly done. Thank you very much.
I've seen this a couple of times. I've watched this animation 3 times since it came out, and this is the 4th.
Do you know, can I say, I realised doing these podcasts, when I'm talking to certain people, I take on like the pace that they talk. I've started laughing like you. Have you noticed?
I haven't, but I'll look at it now.
I just laughed a second ago and I thought, that's just exactly what he sounds like when he's laughing. We're chameleonic.
I am in a WhatsApp group with Mark Donaldson and Ben Verth, both from Scotland, and the police box boys, all from Scotland.
Oh, I dread to think about how filthy that gets.
And every now and then, I find myself about to type the word A, like A-Y-I, like a Scottish person, and I have to stop myself. I'll be like, A, it's a load of old shite. And then I'm like, no, Dylan, you don't speak like that. It's a load of old shit.
Oh, God, I'm so bad with names. You know the police box fellas? You know what, the guy who does all the intros and all of that with the glasses? Yeah, man. One, he's really hot. Two, sorry, Lee, if you're listening to this. Two, I mean, he sends me a message about arranging a recording, yeah? Mm. And I'll give him an answer. And then I get paragraphs of this insanely weird messages being quirky and funny as hell. I think we might be getting married, you know.
He's a very funny chap. Very funny.
Terrible flirt as well. Well, on that note, let's jump into episode 3. We've got some fish people action in episode 3.
Oh, I can't wait. But not the fish people you're expecting.
Let's find out.